in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Broadcasting live from the greatest city in the world.
Austin, Texas, baby.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
You guys want to play some twos?
You know what? Actually, we're kind of in the middle of a conversation.
B&E.
What's B&E?
Bucky Godbolt, Aaron Hogan on the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260 and hornfm.com with the Longhorns play and Austin Talks Sports.
You think we've gotten too radical with our message? Well, I got news for you. You ain't heard nothing yet. And if you don't know, now you know. Glory, glory!
Woo! Oh, man, it is a busy Wednesday. A lot to do. A lot of top stories today. A lot of headlines locally with the MLS situation and the vote at the Austin City Council. Got big developments in the world of college football for the Longhorns. A couple of transfers, and certainly the Maryland story is out there. Still waiting on the report from the Ohio State investigation into Urban Meyer as well. That is expected by Sunday of this week, so we'll dive into some college football, NFL, Cowboys and Texans prepping for preseason game number 2. Get you some details on that. And Major League Baseball, 6 weeks to go in the regular season. There's some amazing stuff happening and some frustrating stuff happening if you're a fan of the Houston Astros. We'll dive into all that or try to get to as much of it as we can. Also this hour, at the bottom of the hour, we talk to a Michigan insider who covers the Wolverines, number 13 in our Horn Top 20 Countdown presented by Reliable Automotive. We'll also have your salacious gossip and your chance to blitz ahead of WTF Wednesday. Where's the fun? We'll find it in Austin, Texas this week. Including, we're talking to our buddy Matthew Odom from the Austin American Taste and Buck. His big dining guide is coming out soon. Is the guide you got to have when you want to go out and check out all the great restaurants in Austin, Texas. He's going to have that, a little preview of that for us coming up in our 9 o'clock hours. But we're busy. We got a lot.
Well, there's a lot on the table with sports all over the place.
It's fun. It's fun. But let's get people caught up on this Wednesday morning with all the news we can, and then we'll dive into the top stories. Ticket City Update Desk we go. Headlines brought to you by Top Gun Lawn and Equipment Rentals. That's Top Gun with two N's.net if you're searching for them online. High drama and an extremely tight vote is expected this morning when the Austin City Council convenes to debate and ultimately decide the immediate future of Major League Soccer coming to Austin. In advance of today's special meeting, which Mayor Steve Adler called and expects an up-and-down vote on the Precourt Sports Ventures proposal to build a $200 million stadium on city-owned land in North Austin, news broke yesterday that Councilmember Leslie Poole was returning from a visit to Columbus that included mingling with the fan base of the Save the Crew movement seeking to keep that team there. Councilwoman Poole, whose district includes the McCalla Place site where the stadium would be built, has led the opposition to the deal. Today's vote of 11 council members, of course, 10 and the mayor, expected to be very tight, possibly 6-5, one way or the other, according to the Austin American-Statesman. The mayor has called it a, quote, great deal for Austin. We'll keep you posted. College football, plenty of news from the 40 acres and around college football. A pair of Longhorn defensive backs announcing they are transferring out of the program just 18 days to the season opener with Maryland. Senior John Bonney and junior Eric Cuffey have decided to move on. Both say they're leaving the program on good terms, just want a chance to find more playing time immediately. Cuffey expected to head to the junior college route, while John Bonney, as a senior graduate, will head to Lubbock and play for Texas Tech this coming season. Tom Herman clearing the way. He's going to go play for Cliff Kingsbury and the Red Raiders. Speaking of that opener with Maryland in 18 days, more turmoil for that program. Athletic director Damon Evans at Maryland announced yesterday that they have parted ways with strength and conditioning coach Rick Court following the death of 19-year-old offensive lineman Jordan McNair and an ensuing investigation. Court has been one of the primary figures in that investigation into the immediate care given to McNair after he collapsed during a team workout on May 29th. Maryland head football coach D.J. Durkin remains on administrative leave as the school continues to investigate allegations of player mistreatment and abuse and a toxic and unsafe culture for the program. We'll hear more from the AD and the school president coming up. Baseball, make it 9 straight home losses for the Houston Astros now and 5 straight overall. Colorado roughed up Justin Verlander in Houston 5-1 last night at Minute Maid Park. Verlander allowed just 2 of the 5 runs, but the Houston offense, again, missing in action, manages 3 hits on the night. And don't look now, but the Astros lead in the AL West is down to a single game, just 1. Red Hot A's topped Oakland, Seattle last night. It's 3-2. Oakland now has 1-4 straight and gone 17-6 since the All-Star break to chase down the slumping Astros. In Arlington, meanwhile, it was former Texas State Bobcat Paul Goldschmidt hitting his 27th home run of the year to lead Arizona to a 6-4 win over the Rangers. Round Rock lost in Nashville 8-4. And that's the news.
Horn Headlines brought to you by Top Gun Rentals and Lawn Equipment. Get a free steel or Husqvarna weed eater with every riding mower purchase at Top Gun Equipment. TopGun.net. We'll shoot you straight.
Hurry. This offer good through August 31st.
All right. So a lot there, a lot to chew on, a lot of conversations to be had. in that note, I'll mention we talked about the Astros earlier, and you know, can they hold off the A's? Can they get healthy enough to? I mean, by the time they get fully healthy, they could be behind the A's at this point. The way the A's are playing, Astros need to get back out on the road, which is where they're headed. They are just not a good home team right now. Just 32-29 on the year. You see what this kid Ronald Acuna is doing, Buck?
I did not.
The 20-year-old. He is an unbelievable young player, leading off for the all of a sudden surging Braves. This kid is 20 years old. 20 years old and doing things never been done before. Since the All-Star break, they put him in the leadoff role, and he's just tearing the cover off the ball. He hit another leadoff home run last night. And how about this? For Ronald Acuna Jr., he is the youngest player ever now to homer twice on back-to-back days, homer 8 times in an 8-game span, homer 6 times in a 5-game span, and hit 5 career leadoff home runs. Youngest player ever to do so. He's playing unbelievable for the Atlanta Braves. And I hate to tell you this, Buck, but your New York Yankees are now 10 games behind the Boston Red Sox, who are 51 over 500.
I hate to tell you this, that the New York Yankees are second or third in wins during the course of a season, and they're 10 games behind.
10.
Yeah, 10
games
behind
the Red Sox. That's how good the Red Sox are.
The Yankees are pretty good, too.
51 over.
They don't play in the same league or the division that Cleveland plays in.
Well, that's the luxury for the Indians. Astros are swooning. The Austin City Council will meet to discuss the future of MLS in Austin. It's going to be very close. Kevin Lytle, who joined us yesterday from the Austin American Statesman, he was the one that wrote this morning that he's hearing 6-5 either way, but his prediction was 6-5 in favor of the MLS coming to Austin. We'll see. It is razor thin. Steve Adler, the mayor, could be the deciding vote. Could be 5-5 with the council members, and then he would be the 6th vote. But even then, there's a fight in Columbus for Anthony Precourt. And somebody mentioned yesterday that Mark Wahlberg, you know,
yes.
Marky Mark.
Yeah.
Apparently he was in Columbus yesterday because he owns some car dealerships there.
Dude, you're from Boston. Stay in Boston where you belong.
And he was asked about, would you be interested in buying the Columbus Crew and trying to help keep them there? And he said, yeah. I'm good friends with Robert Kraft. Robert Kraft's a dear friend. He owns the Patriots, but he also owns the MLS team in Boston. And he said, yeah, I'd be interested in that.
Sure, I'd love to go compete against him. I just need another little Tory thing to mess around with. Quit messing with our soccer team.
Well,
get out of there.
The fact of that is that it has to be for sale. I mean, somebody will say everything's for sale, but Anthony Precourt has not said that this is a team that's for sale.
Precourt seems to have a lot of money.
He does. Well, and he sees the future in Austin and the booming tech industry and the money that's here. That's why he's willing to put $200 million of his own money up to build this stadium and then give it to the city so his team can play in it. That's the kind of where this deal is, but it's very close, 6-5 at this point, coming or going. We'll see. But yeah, the whole thing about Marky Mark, again, the fact that he said he's interested in buying the team, the team's not for sale at this point.
No. As long as the Precourt right now.
Precourt owns it and is not interested in selling. Now, if the Austin City Council votes this down today, 6-5 or whatever, and all of a sudden the door is locked on Austin, maybe he would be interested in selling at that point.
Oh, yeah, and then when Precourt tells him what the price is, he'll probably say, no, I'm going back to Boston.
I was trying to sell some cars.
That's all. That's all I was trying to do is sell a few cars, try to get you people interested.
Oh, man.
Or piss you off. Now they're not going to buy your cars anymore.
All right. So a lot out there, man. It is crazy. Watching this Astros swoon, watching these A's surge. Astros are having to deal with a pennant race like they didn't last year. They had such a comfortable lead. Now they have to figure some things out. I'm just amazed at how bad they are at home. I mean, if you look at their home and road splits, Buck, they're the best. Think about this. They're the fourth best pitching team on the road. No, check that. They're the best pitching team on the road, and they're the best offensive team on the road. At home, they're the fourth best pitching team. They're still very good, but they're 24th in batting at home. It's just boggles the mind that they're that good away from home. Even with all the injuries, they still put up runs and scored runs when they leave Minute Maid Park for whatever reason. They come home and they can't hit anything. They had 3 hits last night total against the Colorado Rockies. I mean, it's just for whatever reason in that park, they're not seeing the ball, hitting the ball.
It's very hard to repeat as champions. That's all there is, no matter whether it's injuries.
Oh, no doubt.
Or it's just hard. It's just hard to have that same kind of magic back-to-back years.
Well, the frustrating part is they're probably a more complete and better team this year than they were a year ago. And they had an August swoon a year ago. They lost 8 of 9 at one point in August last year after they didn't make the trade for Justin Verlander, and there was some resentment in the locker room and all that, and Jeff Luhnow was taking heat. But then, of course, the hurricane came, and they traded for Justin Verlander, and They went on to win the World Series. So they still could. This is still a very good baseball team. But unlike last year, they have a real contender in the Oakland A's. I mean, Oakland is red hot, great young ball club, very aggressive young ball club. And they're right now right on the heels of the Astros, just a game back. So they don't have a luxury. They need to get Altuve back in that lineup. They need to get George Springer back in that lineup. Boy, they need to get Brian McCann back if they can at some point in September. They need Chris Devensky back in their bullpen. He's been down for a little bit. All these guys need to get back. The Astros, I still think, are right there with the Red Sox, if healthy and full. But they've got a pennant race on their hands this year.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody's with the Red Sox this year. This is just their year. Their pitching is the one that's going to get them. But, man, can they score a lot of runs? And they are so athletic in the field and on the bases. And
Alex Cora has been a godsend for them.
Yeah, he has.
He's brought a lot of that Astro mindset to that locker room.
He's brought a lot of aggressive baseball.
Yeah,
they have a really aggressive team.
Of course, Alex Cora was A.J. Hinch's bench coach a year ago when the Astros won the World Series. He brought a lot of the analytics and ahead of, you know, preparation that the Astros use, and he's really brought an aggressive style. I still think Astros Red Sox, if both are healthy, is a hell of a 7-game series. I mean, it could go either way because the Astros can throw arms, and you know, Verlander and Cole and Keuchel, and the bullpen is better. But yeah, I mean, the Red Sox right now are the team to beat. But a lot of fun things happen in the world of Major League Baseball with 6 weeks to play. Not a lot of fun things happening in the Big Ten or at Maryland. Let's hear from the athletic director and the president yesterday. This was pretty striking. Maryland called a press conference for 1 o'clock yesterday, where a lot of people thought DJ Durkin was going to be fired. Who instead they fired the strength and conditioning coach Rick Court for his role and the training staff's role in the death of 19-year-old offensive lineman Jordan McNair this past summer. Here was the president Wallace Lowe stepping to the podium to say this about the university's complicity in this tragedy.
The university assets legal and moral responsibility for the mistakes that our training staff made on that fateful workout day of May the 29th, which of course led subsequently to his death on June 13th.
Then Damon Evans, the athletic director, who just got there, by the way. Remember, Damon Evans was hired in June. I mean, he's just on the job here.
Ooh.
Yeah, he's brand new. He's kind of inherited this mess. And it is a mess and a tragedy and possibly a crime, as we've talked about all morning long. Here's Damon Evans following up with the president on what did or didn't happen with the training staff on that fateful day.
Make no mistake. We will not tolerate any behavior from any employee within Maryland Athletics that is detrimental to the mental or physical well-being of our student athletes. There is nothing more important than our student athletes' safety. Our athletic training staff did not take Jordan's temperature and did not apply a cold water immersion treatment. I expect additional findings when the Walters report is complete. That report will be made public. We have already taken immediate steps to put additional safeguards in place for all of our athletic practices and training, not just football.
So they are watching every word they say. They are slowing down their speech. They're not just got something in front of them that they're reading verbatim. They're looking at it and understanding the tone that they put into the words that they say, and they're not making any mistakes when they say something because they know just one word can send this thing into even another different realm when it comes to what's about to happen to Maryland through the family and everybody else involved.
Well, when the full report is out, we'll see where it goes. But you're right about the choice of words. But it's pretty striking that they take full moral and legal responsibility for the situation.
Yeah, not many universities. A lot of universities are trying to find ways on how can we financially get out of some of this.
Yeah. And as this text says, before you suffer a heat stroke, you suffer from heat exhaustion. And the Maryland staff missed those symptoms. And I think, this is me speculating, but I listened to a lot of this press conference yesterday. What you wonder is if Rick Court and the strength and conditioning staff prevented the medical staff from doing their job, and this is part of the problem with the Maryland program.
Okay, well, then now somebody's going to jail.
Right, that it's heavy-handed. And that was seen as a soft play. Remember, they're running 110-yard sprints.
Which I don't know why offensive linemen are running 10 110 yard sprints. I don't know what that's about.
And he went down and started to suffer. And, you know, this is what needs to come out. Did the medical professionals, were they prevented from treating the young guy because the coach, the strength coach, was being a criminal?
And, then the strength and conditioning coach is going to jail.
Right. And that's what needs to come out. But either way, the university just admitted that they didn't take his temperature. The guy's clearly suffering heat exhaustion, no temperature taken, no steps taken to lower his body temperature, no steps taken to diagnose whether he was suffering from a heat stroke.
Yeah, the temperature was in the 80s at that time, but if you've ever been back east, mid-80s is nasty.
Yeah, and humid.
In that area.
The fact was, even their own chronology shows that he suffered a seizure, a heat stroke related, a heat dehydration related seizure, just after 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and a 911 call was not placed to get him immediate assistance.
Yeah, the negligence of time is just ridiculous.
58 minutes it took.
If the guy hasn't recouped in about 10 minutes or 15 minutes or so, guess what?
The body dehydrating and going into lockup is just not much different than a car engine. If the car is running with no water in it, you can drive that car for a little bit.
Then just break, that's it.
But then the engine's just going to lock up and you're done. And this is what happened. I mean, they airlifted him. After that 911 call, the emergency personnel were on scene, realized the scope of this situation, got him on. They airlifted him to Baltimore to try to get him immediately cooled down. His temperature when he arrived at the hospital was 106, and he never recovered. 2 weeks later, he died, but you know the damage was already done at that point. I mean, they were trying to do life-saving measures from that point on, but the lack of care and the lack of medical attention in the most critical moments – right after he was, you know, his first seizure and his body began to overheat is what led to his death, which is what leads people like us this morning and people saying, well, this should be prosecuted. This is a crime. This is people who are trained to know better didn't take the proper precautions. Why didn't that happen? How didn't that happen? Someone needs to be held accountable for that. Not just apologize, not just
pay money to the
pay
parents.
Money to the parents. No, this is potentially criminal.
Yeah, I mean, and as I said, I've never seen a case like this. There are plenty of cases where kids have died and people have been negligent. I've never seen anybody go to jail over it. And I don't know if it's going to happen here, but I know this. If a trainer, if a strength and conditioning coach said no to a trainer, that no, just leave him, he's going to be okay, then that guy's probably going to go to jail.
Well,
he's going to be prosecuted.
And I shouldn't even speculate because the trainer has to walk through that coach and say, no, we're going to tend to this young guy. That all needs to be – I need to see that in the investigation of what was done when and why it wasn't. But, yeah, I do think if –
But most trainers know that that's what you have to do.
That's their job. That's why they're there. They're there to not listen
to coaches.
It's
not their first rodeo. I mean, they understand about heat exhaustion.
It says, my question is, why are they now taking this so seriously? It happened in May. Well, I'll say this for them. The AD got on the post just after this. And they what they were talking about yesterday is this investigation. They now have enough info to move on Rick Court, the strength and conditioning coach. Let's hear Damon Evans quickly on the head coach's future, DJ Durkin, because he's still on administrative leave, and his job is by no means safe at this point.
No.
He is the head football coach. Here's Damon Evans on the head coach's future.
As far as Coach Durkin and administrative leave, obviously we've hired an external review team to take a look at this. But as additional information comes forward, we will do what's appropriate. So we'll move in that manner.
Well, and again, Durkin's part of this is it's his program first and foremost. But the ESPN report that came out last Friday, what went on with this young man in a lot of the players and other people within that program's minds, anonymous sources, as Will Muschamp would call them,
yes,
is just what happened with Jordan McNair is a symptom of the bigger issue that this is a kid
who died, but they've been reckless in other places.
Yeah, that they're way above board. And we talked to Howard Griffith last hour from Big Ten Network. His son plays at Notre Dame as a freshman, and any parent. I mean, there's one thing. There's a difference between teaching and coaching and developing young people and belittling, demeaning, demoralizing.
That's not your expectation to send somebody to college.
Never.
Not in a classroom and not on a football field.
Never. And that's when, you know, the timeline is very
But you said the AD had just got there in June. It happened in May.
Right. But remember, take the chronology. There were meetings held with the coaching staff and the players and the leadership council about the way the culture of the program back during the spring before Jordan McNair died. Like they were worried that they were having concerns as a program, as players back in spring practice. And then Jordan McNair passed away, and it really obviously infuriated a lot of his teammates that this is reckless. This is a program who's toxic. Where do you keep hearing that word? And then that once they got to training camp, the behavior continued with the coaches and coaching staff and the strength and conditioning coach. And that's what led to this story, and that's why the lid has been blown off of it, and that's why it's a big story right now. And most likely, I would think DJ Durkin doesn't coach again at Maryland.
I don't think so. I don't think he'll be coaching there when Texas gets there in a couple weeks. I don't think that's going to happen. I can't imagine that guy being on the sideline. I can't imagine him stepping on the sideline.
I would agree with you. All right, so those are your top stories. We've talked about John Bonney and his decision to transfer and Tom Herman's decision to allow him to transfer to a team that's on the Longhorn schedule this year. We'll talk more about that coming up. And throughout the day today, John Bonney is now headed to Texas Tech, as a graduate and a graduate transfer. He'll be able to play immediately for Cliff Kingsbury and the Red Raiders.
But he is a graduate of the University of Texas.
Yeah, graduated last December.
Yep.
Degree in communications. So we've got that, and Eric Cuffey going to head the junior college route. Not a huge surprise with the depth they now have in their defensive secondary with this recruiting class. There were included six defensive backs and then redshirt freshmen that have come off their redshirt, Kobe Boyce and others that are taking up they're moving up that depth chart right now for the Longhorns. We come back. It's back to the Horn Top 25 Countdown presented by Reliable Automotive. We're going to talk to an insider covering the Michigan Wolverines on a daily basis. How good is Shea Patterson, and how good can Michigan be in 2018? We'll ask our guest next here on the Horn. He's a pinball wizard that has. All right, B&E on a Wednesday. 15 of August, payday for a lot of folks. Payday.
That money's gone.
Already spent?
Yeah.
How about this text? It says, Reggie Grob, a UT player, died in 1962 from heat exhaustion, prompted DKR to recognize the importance of hydration. Yeah, we're past that.
Way
this
past
could
that
ever
part.
Happen.
We were talking about salt tablets last week and the way we were treated as athletes in the 70s.
And we're so far past it. The point where this should ever happen at any level, any level of sports, because there's just so much known medically. And as this text says, even high school student trainers know that the first step for
middle
a potential
school
heat
kids
exhaustion,
know that.
First step in a potential heat exhaustion is to put cold compresses or ice on the armpits of the individual. Something about this doesn't seem right. Exactly. That, gosh, how did this happen? How is that possible? And that's where I wonder if the
coach, unless somebody tells you, don't go near him, leave him alone, he'll be fine.
Yeah, some type of punishment for falling out during
just drills. Sounds like there was a lot of weirdness about what they did. The eating of candy bars. I mean, just kind of degrading players. Like I said, 110-yard, 10 of those for offensive linemen. Please don't text me with your, well, you know how trainer. No. Certain things are okay. You know, everybody does the little mile run. That's cute. But I don't know whether an offensive lineman is going to get out of 110-yard wind sprint. I just don't.
And then certainly if something does happen, you got to take care of a young person. Hey, with that in mind, let's another team in the Big Ten is the first team we've talked about on our Horn Top 20 Countdown to number one. We're at number 13 on this Wednesday. Let's hit it. It's presented by Reliable Automotive.
It's the Horns College Football Top 20, brought to you by Reliable Automotive.
Four-man rush. Moore steps up. High throw. Tyree Kittle, he's got a convoy. He's got the end zone. That's a Michigan touchdown.
Number 13, the Michigan Wolverines.
Oh, man, this is a fun one to talk about. Michigan is a really interesting team. The Big Ten, and in particular that division of the Big Ten, very, very interesting in 2018. You got Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, and Michigan State. All teams we'll talk about from here to the top. And, Buck, you now like Michigan potentially to win that side of the Big Ten. Earlier in the show, we talked and heard from John Harris, J. Harris Football. He loves Michigan as a potential team to watch for the Final Four, as did our expert Lee Sterling, ParamountSports.com. With that in mind and high expectations in Ann Arbor, let's go to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline. He covers the Wolverines for 24/7 Sports. Zach Shaw is on the line with us. Zach, how you doing?
Hey, fellas, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. How are you guys?
We're doing fantastic, Zach.
Appreciate you. And now, the optimism in Ann Arbor, is it warranted?
I think there's some reasons to believe. I think 13 for me is probably about right. 13, 14, maybe 12. But there's some big questions. Everyone's going to like the defense. They returned 9 starters. They were the number 3 defense last year. And of those nine starters, they return a lot of really good ones. Khalik Hudson, Devin Bush, Rashawn Gary, Chase Winovich, LeVert Hill, David Long, all preseason, all Big Ten kind of players. But the offense guys ranked 102nd in basically every category. They're outside the top 100. So it's as far as winning anything, beating Ohio State, winning the Big Ten, I think you got to see how it looks. I mean, Shea Patterson's obviously the big intriguing piece, because if he comes out and looks like, a run and gun, gunslinging Baker Mayfield type quarterback, well, that changes everything. But it's been a very long time since Michigan had above average quarterback play. It's been probably about a decade, depending on how you want to count Denard Robinson. So it's one of those things. I think inside Ann Arbor, I think a lot of fans are kind of waiting to see it to believe it. As far as on the reporting side, still waiting to hear who the tackles are, their offensive line. Well, let's just say that Calvin Anderson fellow who's from Austin, they sure could have used him, because they're just not quite fully equipped there. And so they're still waiting to hear, what happens. But I think it's one of those things. They recruit well enough. Jim Harbaugh's top five recruiting classes are sophomores and juniors this year. So there's certainly merit to it. They can make the playoff. They can win the Big Ten. But I think really the way to look at it's probably a wait and see what they do at Notre Dame, because they've got five top 15 teams on their schedule. So certainly, if they're going to make it to the playoff and win the Big Ten, they're going to have to be one of the top probably two or three teams in the entire country. So a couple steps away from that, in my opinion.
Zach, when you talk about this defense, and you're not just talking about really good defenders, you're talking about really game changers, guys that can make you turn the ball over on the defensive end side. They just don't sack the quarterback. They take the quarterback's arm off. You got guys that can really make a difference and score points themselves. This defense can score unto itself. For me, I'm trying to figure out what Pep Hamilton's going to bring to the table when it comes to offensive football. I mean, he was a pretty good offensive coordinator, before. And this is new to him. This should be fun when he reunites himself with Coach Harbaugh. I think the difference can come not only just from Shea Patterson, but from his offensive coordinator.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's an interesting, they've changed the dynamic of the offensive coaches. Last year, they had Tim Drevno was their official offensive coordinator, but Pep Hamilton was the pass game coordinator. And I think it was one of those things, and certainly having two quarterbacks leave games and ambulances didn't help. But it was one of those things where it just never seemed to be
right
coordinated properly, right? They had two coordinators and nothing was coordinated. So it was kind of a tricky situation. Drevno has gone on to USC. Harbaugh is assuming offensive coordinator duties. Like, no one's actually called the offensive coordinator right now. They're one of six teams in the country to do that. And so it's a little different, but it sounds like, Harbaugh has really praised the collaboration, because don't forget, they have Jim McElwain, who is the receivers coach. They have Ed Warner, who is the offensive line coach. All three,
right?
Hamilton, Warner, and McElwain have called plays for Big Ten, or not Big Ten teams, but for power conference teams. So it'll be interesting to see. I think it sounds like they're doing a little bit more RPO, which to me is a sign that they are going to acclimate to what Shea Patterson can do. Because Michigan and Harbaugh, very old school fullbacks, tight ends, pro style offenses, flashback to the 80s and 70s. So it certainly seems like they're modernizing things a little bit. But yeah, they all have a really strong experience. I think, that room, it sounds like when people speak up, Harbaugh is going to listen. And so, having some creativity. And I think one thing, speaking of the offensive line, Mark D'Antonio, Michigan State, kind of called Michigan out last year. He said they had 40 different formations in the first half, and they had, 3 points to show for it. So it's one of those things. I think they're trying to have a clearer message, one that the players can, as far as, game plan, one that the players can actually wrap their heads around. They're taking their time with their plays. Might be fewer plays, might be more improvisation in the early first few weeks, but it seems like something so far. One of the players aren't going to say they hate it, but it seems like seems like the players are grasping things a little bit better than they had last year.
Yeah, a little more cohesive. Jim Harbaugh, the fourth-year coach, and talking to Zach Shaw, covers the Michigan Wolverines. He's the beat writer for 24/7 Sports and CBS Sports. Also produces some radio shows, so he gets this as well. Hey, Zach, the quarterback position. It sounds it echoes what we've gone through here in Austin covering the Longhorns. It's a wait and see at quarterback. It's been since Colt McCoy here, and that's a while. But with Jim Harbaugh, wherever he was, whether it was the college ranks or the pro ranks, he seemed to always develop a great quarterback, and that wasn't a problem. And when he was hired, it seemed like, okay, we've got Jim Harbaugh. He played the position. He'll develop the position. Has it been curious for Michigan fans and for you that position has been such an issue?
Yes. I don't know. I'm not quite sure how much of that goes on Harbaugh, because year one, they took Jake Rudock, who was benched and basically, you know, booted out of Iowa, which is not a quarterback, you know, kind of quarterback, you know, place. And he was benched. He was booted out of there, and he threw for 3,000 yards and led them to 10 wins in year one. So there's obviously something there as far as he can develop quarterbacks, and Rudock's still playing for the Lions. You know, no one thought he had an NFL. He didn't even think he had an NFL career. And so, it's hard to tell with last year, because Wilton Spate got hurt week four. Again, that offensive line, you know, not quite doing its job. And then Brandon Peters, another guy, you know, also hurt. And then so they had to play a lot of games with John O'Korn. And I'm sure perhaps some of your listeners remember him from Houston. He was reeled out of the starting job there. So, I mean, they haven't quite had a guy that they're really – was a Harbaugh guy. I think Peters was, but, you know, he was only a redshirt freshman. So Shea Patterson, you know, this is one of those things, if they can't get what they want to get out of Shea Patterson, then I think you can really look at it, because he was the top ranked recruit out of high school. I mean, he just probably out of the 130 teams, 120 of them probably would have taken Shea Patterson as an immediately eligible transfer this past off season. So he's got a lot of skill. He's, you know, he's accurate. He's really poised in the pocket. A lot of NFL scouts are very intrigued by what he can do this year. And so I think it's been a little disappointing for Michigan fans, because they looked at Andrew Luck, they looked at Alex Smith, Colin Kaepernick, you know, some you know, just his entire history, and it hasn't quite happened yet. And there's some insecurity about that, because again, Michigan's gone through, you know, it's like the Cleveland Browns. It seems like they have two or three different starting quarterbacks each year, and none of them seem to work. But I think no one's upset yet, because they know, you know, injuries happen, and there are a couple guys who just weren't the guy. Patterson, if healthy, you know, this will be the big test. If he can get Shea Patterson throwing 3,000 yards plus, then I think all of the talk about developing quarterbacks can be put to rest.
Zach, how about Higdon at running back? I mean, it's been a long time since they had a real quality running back at Michigan, which is kind of hard to believe. I mean, Michael Hart probably was, and he wasn't all that great, I don't believe. But can Higdon make a difference along with Tariq Black? Tariq Black got hurt midway during the season, and maybe I'm overrating the wide receiver, but he missed half the season with a foot injury. But it looked like this is a young guy that was on his way to having a sensational season, even with bad quarterbacks last year.
Yeah, I mean, Tariq Black, he had 11 receptions, 149 receiving yards in three games. You know, yep. So, I mean, you can do some math there. Sure, certainly would have been better than anyone else that Michigan had at receiver. They had their wide receivers had three receiving touchdowns, the fewest Michigan's had at that position since 1975. So,
wow.
So they certainly could use him a lot, and part of that is youth. I mean, they had, you know, their 2017 recruiting class had four-star, five-star wide receivers. Donovan Peoples-Jones probably deserves mention that group as well. He's the number one receiver in the class. So you know, as true freshmen, I think they all struggled, especially, you know, with three different starting quarterbacks. So that's, you know, I've heard really good things about Tariq Black, Donovan Peoples-Jones. I mean, they're both, you know, 6'3", 6'4", run 4.4, 4.5-ish, you know, great vertical leap, just, you know, big bodied guys to have out wide. As far as the running back, you know, Caron Higdon, and you're right, you know, they've had one running back rush for 1,000 yards since Mike Hart. And that was Fitz Toussaint. He didn't live up to the hype in his next season. So certainly looking for one, you know, Caron Higdon was 6 yards short, and that was with, you know, him and Chris Evans each had over 600 yards rushing. They combined for about 1,700, 17 touchdowns. over 6 yards per carry. And I think the big thing is that really increased in the back half of the season. And I think they started to kind of find their stride, find the holes a little bit better. Michigan switched. They did tried to experiment with inside zone blocking, and it didn't work. So they're back to the power run game. And it seemed to work really well, you know, and even against top five run defenses in Ohio State and Wisconsin, they were able to at least do something. Well, I guess Wisconsin, they didn't do anything, but no one really did anything against Wisconsin. But, you know, Higdon, very good. And the big thing with the running backs is they've added about 15 pounds each. And apparently that's a good 15 pounds. You know, they're trying to be NFL caliber running backs, trying to, you know, break through the line a little bit more rather than counting on being outside, and just be durable, because, you know, Michigan knows that injuries can really hurt. And I think the running backs really want to be, you know, kind of the centerpieces of this offense. You know, we mentioned Shea Patterson, maybe he's there, maybe he's not, but they know what they've gotten two running backs coming back that put up pretty good numbers last year.
Zach, appreciate the insight, the view from Ann Arbor on this Michigan Wolverines team. Sounds like the ceiling could be the Final Four. The floor could be fourth in the Big Ten, in their side of the Big Ten at this point, depending on quarterback play. A lot of talent, but we'll see if it comes together in year four for Jim Harbaugh. Zach, thanks a lot.
Thanks,
appreciate
Zach.
It, my friend.
Thank you.
All right, there's Zach Shaw. There's Zach Shaw. Good stuff right there. Good stuff. All right, so Michigan. Think about this, Buck. This is our first Big Ten team. He mentioned it, but it bears mentioning. We're at number 13.
Mm-hmm.
They have five teams on their schedule who we haven't talked about yet. Five teams who we're going to talk about between now and number one.
And I've already moved them up in front of everybody.
Well, they got to beat those teams.
Those five teams.
And one, two, three of them are on the road.
Yes.
Including the Columbus at the end of the year. So there's Michigan. Thanks to Zach Shaw. Good stuff right there. Quick timeout. Back. Load up the blitz. 447-3776. Your chance to sound off. A little salacious gossip as well. Then we find the fun on a Wednesday. Busy with you here on the Horn.
Where you get that from? Did Tawana tell you that? Did Tawana tell you that? Because I ain't for no games, okay?
No games, no games, just gossip. It's brought to you by Bud Light. Make sure you're ready for the Cedar Park Rodeo. Bud Light presenting that out at HEB Center at Cedar Park this weekend, August 17th and 18th. If you love the barebacks, the saddle broncs, the bull riding, it is the pro rodeo event of the summer out at Cedar Park Rodeo, HEB Center at Cedar Park. Need to be there. Need to be there this weekend. Have a nice call. You're looking for places for Bud Lights. We'll find the fun in Austin next hour and all the cool places, including the rodeo this weekend and this week. But good place. You're going to be out at the UT Club today.
You know what? I haven't hydrated myself well enough this morning.
Come on, man.
I'm doing a terrible job this morning, drinking way too much coffee.
I'm trying to take three of these core hydrations already.
I know. I'm going to have to down a bunch of stuff after the show. After eating, having all that dream sickle, popsicle.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was so good yesterday.
You took the advice of our pinch hitting producer Dylan, who's doing a tremendous job for BK.
That was fabulous, man.
It was National Cream Sickle Day, so you had some vanilla ice cream,
and then Sunkist orange soda in it. It was so cold, and so I only did half a pint to start, and then I was waiting like a couple hours to get to the next Dream Sickle or whatever. That was fantastic, Dylan. That's now my favorite. It's ridiculous.
So you like Sunkist, let's start with that. You're a fan of the orange-flavored soda.
Not really. I'm not afraid of the float, period. But with the vanilla ice cream, that's good stuff.
Way to go. Way to go, Dylan. You brought the insights to...
Thanks for my fatness. Oh, we don't like to say fatness on this show. I'm sorry. Thanks for my...
Your paunch?
Yeah, my little paunch. Yeah, thank you very much. Appreciate the paunch.
Or fupa?
My poopah from yesterday. Thank you.
There you go. All right, there's your salacious gossip, because we got to get to the top of the hour. Let's get to your blitz. It's time.
The Bucky and E Blitz.
The Morning Blitz, brought to you by Apple Leasing, where you only have to pay for the new half of the car or truck, the half under factory warranty, in any make, any model. Click appleleasing.com and see how easy it is.
I already know right now you guys aren't going to be that great this morning. I can just tell you. I'm feeling you have nothing on your minds today. And you're not going to be good, but we'll find out. First blitzer, you're up.
This is Dirk Diggler, and I'm sorry, I'm buying the soccer team.
Oh, you're buying Dirk Diggler is buying the soccer team?
Gee.
Marky Mark.
Marky Mark did a good job of that. Next blitzer, you're up.
It's got to be for sale first, though, doesn't it?
True.
I don't know why y'all are down on Maryland. It costs a lot of money to keep a training staff on sidelines. And college football doesn't make that much money. You guys know that.
Yeah. Yeah, they're Under Armour's pumping millions into that Maryland program.
And for years they have.
Yes.
Next Blitzer, you're up.
Hey, Buck.
Yeah.
I hear y'all talking about that bareback riding. What kind of ladies they going to have?
No, that's not. It's a bareback. It's with horses. It's not with ladies.
It's a rodeo, man.
It's a rodeo.
Saddle Bronx, bareback.
Disgusting. Next Blitzer, you're up.
Hey, Bucky.
Yes.
I heard you like bareback riding, but you don't have to go to a rodeo.
Yeah, I'm going to go to the rodeo. Next Blitzer, talk to us.
Today's Where's the Fun Wednesday? We have to find it because it's not from 9 to 10 today.
Ouch.
Oh, that hurt my shoulder. Next Blitzer, you're up.
Hey, Hogan.
Yeah.
This is Javier, Bucky's blonde guy. I want to file a complaint because he's making me work with zucchinis in my mouth while I cut the grass.
No, I don't do all of that.
Are you demeaning Javier, your friend who works with you and for you?
He's my friend, okay?
All right, there's your blitz. Nice job.
Is that it?
That's it.
We're gone.
That's what we've got.
Not as bad as I thought it would be. Not as bad whatsoever.
Could have been worse. Could have been better. You know, it's kind of like a lot of things in life. When we come back, we're going
to... Hey, by the way, E, I saw that Marilyn Monroe picture.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
The nude scene?
Yep.
It's still in the closet. Did they release it and I missed it?
It ain't in the closet anymore.
Well, you need to show your buddy or show your boy over here.
Yeah.
No. Hey, we come back. It's the 9 o'clock hour on a Wednesday. That means Where's the Fun? We'll partner with our friends at Austin360.com to find great things to do in Austin, Texas this week. Tom Gimbel will pick up the live music picks for the week. And Matt Odom, the restaurant critic and reporter for Austin American Statesman and Austin360.com, will preview his dining guide, which is coming up. Plus, Buck, the State Fair of Texas has announced the 14th annual Big Tex Choice Awards. What are the new items that are going to be on the menu potentially up at Fair Park when the Longhorns and Sooners get
Philly
together?
Philly cheesesteak?
I'll get you that coming up as well. Plus more on the Horn Top 25 and all the fun. It's beginning on the Horn.